go. Take a long holiday.
Hello, you are listening to WJRH 104.9 FM, Lafayette College Radio, Easton, Pennsylvania. This is the show, Animatronic Dinosaurs, Lafayette's premier movie radio talk show. Joining me today is...
Alex Holm,
the lone co-host for the day.
Yep.
Oh boy, I just lost my headphones. Talk for a bit, Alex.
Yeah, so you guys are stuck with me because Matt is out of town and... Jay Knowles is in another country, Josh.
Yes, he is. But it doesn't mean that Alex won't be coming back. Alex is now a regular host on the show. Not sure if we talked that last week. Did we?
They mentioned it.
I think we did.
Either way.
So we actually did get to see a movie this weekend. I know, big surprise.
us actually
watching movies. But we got out and we saw, of the ridiculous lineup of movies this weekend, we ended up getting to see the film Kingsman 2, The Golden Circle. So this is interesting because both, when we did our summer, well, not our summer, our 2017 preview at the start of the year, Josh put this movie up as one of his highest, one of his most, like, looking forward to, most anticipated. And I think Matt had it up there too.
I think it was in my top five, or at least top ten.
Yeah, like, this movie was on people's radar, and I think that, at least for me, it wasn't ever up there, which is weird to think, because the first Kingsman movie is incredible. But, this one, I guess just right out of the gate, both Alex and I were kind of disappointed in Kingsman 2. It's, I think it's... This summer's been weird, because I feel like it's been, like, if you count this in the summer, this year at least has been a world of movies that are good but not great. Like, this felt for me at least a lot Guardians 2 like.
I agree. It wasn't like terrible or anything, but I just felt like it could have been so much more.
Like, well, right now, okay, we can go on a rant some other day. I'm sure I'm gonna go on a rant someday about how I don't like Rotten Tomatoes and distrust their rating systems, but it still should be kind of a understandable representation of how a movie is doing, and currently Kingsman has a 51 on there, which I don't think it deserves.
I think that's a little lower than it deserves. Yeah,
yeah, like I could see this being in the upper 60s at least.
Yeah,
like, it's in no way a bad movie. It's just not. It's coming up against a movie that was so much better than it that there was no way for it to be strong. If it had a much weaker first round film, it probably wouldn't have been so critically panned, but it's just trying to live up to something that it probably couldn't have done unless they had taken it to a very, very original approach, which I'm not sure they wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure for me that this movie... I mean, one of the biggest things that I disliked about this movie is that it wasn't offering a whole lot new, a whole lot unique compared to the first one. The first one, there were so many unexpected scenes that just kind of blew me away, really surprised me, that I really enjoyed, and I didn't quite get any of that in this movie. And maybe that was because I saw the first one, so I already knew kind of the direction, style, and like how it was going to go. But that was one of the disappointing things. And you're right, that was primarily because it was a sequel to such a good movie.
And I feel like with this one, they saw very, very vocal reception to what people thought was good in the first one.
Yeah.
And they're like, let's make that the entire movie.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like, we'll put a warning out. We're going to spoil the original Kingsman. We're not going to spoil this new one, but we can't really talk about certain parts of the new one without spoiling the original. And so the famous church scene in the original felt like it was just bleeding all over the place in this.
Yeah, and that scene, partially what made that work so well, was it was just like so out of nowhere. And I really enjoyed that scene, but it was limited. Like, that was just one scene in the movie. Other than that, there wasn't an absurd amount of just like CGI violence, whereas this movie was all slow-mo CGI action sequences.
Yeah, it felt like that. It just felt like they were relying on it so much in certain scenes that could have been done practically.
Yeah,
like the scene in the church in the first one comes like it comes out of nowhere, and so you're not expecting like that has a decent amount of CGI in it, and it's good, but it blends well and it follows this like cartoony feel that the rest of the movie doesn't have, so it feels like its own place. But this one just felt like everything was that. Every single piece of action set piece was something like that. had all that crazy like camera movements around where the camera just shifts to weird angles whenever somebody moves past it.
Yeah.
But and it's like the comedy was everywhere. But I will say, like, I think that this movie did get into some really interesting interesting things. Like it's hard to talk about it without spoiling stuff.
Yeah.
But it did get into, you know, we're actually going to do a spoiler review in like 10 minutes. We're actually going to get a guest on the show around then too. So we'll let you know when that's coming up, just so that you guys know, if you haven't seen the movie, to tune out for a little bit and for how long. But still in this sense, it's like, I thought that there was some, they build this. This is a really high billing movie with a lot of very famous actors in it.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
But it felt like a lot of very famous cameos.
Yeah, none of the big stars who are new to this movie had all that much screen time. Most of the screen time was devoted to the stars from The Last Kingsman.
I mean, that's good. I kind of glad that that was what they were going for. This had a very fun caricature of the American president.
Yeah.
It felt less of like a Trump caricature, though, and more of like a George Bush caricature.
Yeah, more of a traditional conservative, yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the Kingsman franchise, I kind of felt it a little bit in the first one, felt they're really digging at Americans, which is funny because the audience here probably eats this movie up. But this one, they felt like they're putting that up a little bit higher. Like the first one, I think the closest they got to it was with the president being looped into Samuel Jackson's character's evil plan.
Yeah.
Like, he was very, like, there's that scene where you have the fake President Obama.
See from behind, yeah.
Yeah. And it's very obviously the president. And then you see when all that, everyone's heads explodes, the entire, like, president and his cabinet all die.
Yeah.
So, and then this one, like, that's, like, even more of a big deal. Like, these characters are.
Well, because the president actually gets some screen time and some lines in this movie.
Yeah. He's like a ridiculous caricature, which seems like a lot of characters in this are ridiculous.
Yeah,
characters.
This movie's a little over the top. And the first movie was over the top, but to me, the first movie worked more in that, whereas this one, a lot of the new characters they introduced just didn't quite work as much for me.
Well, the first one seems stupid. Doesn't seem stupid.
Yeah.
This one at times seems stupid.
I think the first one was a lot more self-aware. Like, a lot of the self-awareness, it was almost kind of over the top, making fun of itself, making fun of other movies. Whereas this one, it felt a little less self-aware, and it was actually doing this over the top thing for entertainment and not for satire.
Yeah. And it's, just some of the characters in it really, they all these new characters they added. Halle Berry's in it. Her character seems kind of pointless.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about certain other characters because even if the trailer shows them, we don't want to assume everyone of our listeners has seen the trailer. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that later, that the trailer for this movie, at least the second one, spoils the whole movie.
Yeah.
It does spoil the entire movie.
If you haven't seen the trailer yet, don't watch the
trailer. Yeah, do not watch this trailer. It's not like Spider-Man, where Spider-Man's trailer not only spoils the entire plot, but like shows the entire plot in succession.
In order, yeah.
This doesn't show the entire plot in order, but it does show, it literally shows the resolution to the entire plot.
Oh, yeah, it basically shows the last scene of the movie.
Yeah. So, gosh.
And not just that, but there are some other elements that have been
spoiled. Yeah, but it spoiled every major action set piece.
And certain reveals that would have paid off more.
Yeah.
Had I not seen it in the trailer.
And I think the closest movie I can compare this to is Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which I liked a lot more. I thought that Guardians 2 has its flaws, but it still maintained this like heart to it. But it's also just felt a little forgettable in terms of comparing it to the first one, which you're not like, okay, sure. It's hard to follow up these two fantastic movies, but they're both by the same creative teams.
Yeah.
Like, Matthew Vaughn did both of these, and James Gunn did both Guardians 1 and Guardians 2, and I'm sure that Matthew Vaughn was under a lot of pressure. Like, you have to add this in, and you have to add this in, and this in, and, like, you have to tie this, because they're already probably going for a third one. This movie's going to make money.
Yep. It's already been announced.
I
think that might have contributed. I'm sure he was under a lot more studio pressure, and that kind of led to why it feels a little more generic and like formulaic.
He
probably was a little stifled creatively.
Well, and I'm still upset about the whole trailer problem.
Yeah,
but
and that's not on him.
Yeah, it's not on him. But I think that, and I don't even think in a sense it's on 100% on the studios, because they send trailers out. they send their footage they want used in a trailer out somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wouldn't have been a best call to use that plot resolution scene in the trailer. But, and like studios, yeah, they do have the ability to say, hey, maybe this isn't a good idea. Like that one little scene in the trailer that ruins the entire movie. Like, yeah. And that one that's like on screen for half a second, but it's noticeably framed enough that image sticks in your mind, and a similar image is brought up during the film that signals you in that middle part. You're like, well, now I know what's going to happen. Like, I know the entire resolution of the movie after that. And it's just that one little thing. They could have left it out. It wouldn't have changed the trailer at all.
No, it really didn't add anything.
But it would have made so much of that. And I'm also upset that they use every major action set piece, even if it's seconds in it. That was that, and it just kind of sucks. I mean, off the heels of It, which I thought was so good, this feels like, we're back in the slump of the summer was. it's been a really weird year for films. I mean, just looking at the films that came out this weekend, we had Kingsman, the Lego Ninjago movie, and Friend Request. And despite the stuff I'm hearing great about the Lego Ninjago movie, and actually our guest could probably talk about it a little bit once we have him on, it seems like review-wise, these are all things that are coming on the heels of other stuff. Like, this is the first time a Lego movie has been gotten rotten. Yeah. And then, of course, there's Friend Request, which that movie, I was looking at the box office report from Friday. Uh-huh. Didn't even make $1 million on Friday. Stronger, Ooh. That movie about, that movie like opened in 100 theaters, and that about the Boston bombing survivor, almost made as much as it in a fifth of the theaters. Yeah, that shouldn't be happening.
Yeah.
But I think this was also a shelved film. It's been out for over a year in Germany, and represents, as a horror fan, everything that's wrong with the horror genre. I mean, the scary thing is, you look at September so far, and we are in the third weekend in September, and only one movie's done well.
Box office-wise?
Not even box office-wise, just critically.
Oh.
One movie has done well.
Stronger?
Wide release-wise. I mean, sure, Stronger, Battle of the Sexes. Yeah. Those will probably get wide releases down the road, but, I mean, this is just in a way continuing the trend from August. I mean, August had nothing that was good in it. Maybe Detroit. Detroit was like an exception, but Detroit bombed the box office. But Wind River did go wide.
It's going wide.
But, I mean, that was an August movie.
Yeah, but that's definitely an exception.
Yeah. Continuing our... actually, Alex, what would you give out of 20? Because you didn't end up giving me that list for Kingsman.
I was torn. I'm right between a 13 and 14 on that.
Okay.
I think I'm going to give it a 13.
13, so that was what I gave it. So it's instead of 13. Which, let me see when we sort everything out where it falls on our grand scheme of things spreadsheet, something or other. I don't know. I'm really into organization right now. Nope, that's Rotten Tomato score. Currently, it sits right in between Fate of the Furious. It's right by Fate of the Furious, The Glass Castle, Power Rangers, 47 meters down the wall. So it jumps in front of that. I think it's right behind Guardians 2 and in front of Atomic Blonde.
Okay.
Which is an interesting point for which it hits.
But that sounds about right to me.
Yep. I'd say. Still below King Arthur.
Well, I haven't seen King Arthur, so
yeah.
Let's see what King my rating would do to
I think
it.
You would really dislike King Arthur. Everything about it seems like something that you wouldn't like, but it's, I don't know. That's a fun one. I mean, what a year. Feels like everything has been... We have a lot more low on the list films than we do high on the list films.
Yeah, hopefully award season movies will turn things around.
Yeah. I mean, even looking at the award season, though, I felt like there wasn't really much to get excited for. Like, last year, by this time last year, I'd already known what La La Land and Manchester by the Sea and Moonlight were.
Yeah.
Like, people had already talking about them from things, and like those were so out there. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is the year for blockbusters to actually have a chance, like giving Get Out, Logan, Dunkirk.
I could see Dunkirk getting a nomination.
I'm sure it's
right
going
now.
To. It's not really has anything it's going up against. Like, I would see Wind River doing well.
I yeah, that's my hope.
I mean, it's likely going to. Dunkirk, just from critical response, will probably do it. I disagree with them very much. But that's a talk for another day once the awards season's come up. Let's get our guest on the phone. He called in, I believe, 2 weeks ago to yell about the Emoji Movie. And I'm sure that discussion we'll have when we actually have him in the studio sometime. But that being said, we want to talk spoilers for Kingsman 2. And so let's hopefully this will work. Let's get what's channel?
Hello.
Oh, there we go. Can you hear us, Errol?
Hi. Can you hear you guys?
Awesome. Errol, you are live on Animatronic Dinosaurs.
Hi, everybody.
So we're going to talk spoilers for Kingsman 2, The Golden Circle. So that's going to give us 15 minutes. So so for everyone who hasn't seen it, we'll be wrapping up at around 12:31 East Coast time. And
yeah.
So everyone get your clock set. I'm going to probably get mine set just because I don't want to accidentally spoil it for people. And there we go. So Errol, first off, what'd you think?
I like the movie. I was listening to you guys talk a little bit about before I had chimed in, but I think I liked it a little bit more than you guys. I would have given it a 14 or a 15 out of 20. I liked it. I thought there were definite parts in the middle where it dragged a lot. And I also had some complaints about both the bad guy and some of the other smaller pacing issues. But
yeah, I think that's... what was her name? Holly
Poppy.
Poppy. Yeah, Poppy. Every time I think of that, yeah. I think of Trolls. But Poppy something. Poppy Adams. She seemed she got the ridiculousness that Samuel L. Jackson had, but she felt very ungrounded and kind of just like everything in this movie, just so much more. Like she's just crazy.
Yeah, I felt like Julianne Moore is a great actress. But she didn't add anything to the role, and the role didn't really add anything to her. Unlike in the last movie, where Samuel L. Jackson was able to just be ridiculous, but also make it work. And I thought it just didn't. It wasn't nearly as good in this time around.
She reminded me a lot of like a Marvel villain that she was just kind of there to move the plot. But
totally,
like, nothing really memorable about her.
And I mean, even down to the very end. Like her death happens in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I would also, on top of that, not necessarily in defense of Marvel villains, but the Marvel villains that are there just to move the plot along, they aren't distracting from the rest of the story. Yeah. I felt like Poppy was a little bit distracted.
Yeah,
that's fair.
They pull the entire movie to an entire separate location just to talk about her.
Yeah.
When they could have set her in much more interesting and involved. She never felt in danger till the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
I liked her motivation a little bit better. She seemed like her whole thing with the drug, like wanting to get power with drugs, like make drugs legal, that made sense. I get why somebody who's like a drug cartel would be like, make them legal so I can just sell them like a normal person can.
Yeah.
The way she went about it, though,
yeah.
I mean, my problems with it... isn't necessarily the message, and I thought her motivations and stuff were good, but I thought it was definitely heavy-handed. I thought all the stuff with the president
and
just all the conversations, like, I get that you want to talk about it and make it an issue, but it's really taking away from a lot of the other plot that's going on. There was so much more that they could have done with, you know, all the other, you know, characters that they had that were more interesting.
Yeah, I mean... the whole reveal in the end with Pedro Pascal's character, Whiskey, turning out, like, having his own motivations, that just felt so tacked on. Like, I'd forgotten that he was on his way there and that he was evil. And then he comes in, and I was like, at the time, I was like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. I totally forgot about it. And I'm like, yeah, I did totally forget about him. And then he just kind of shows up. And if he hadn't shown up, wouldn't have felt any differently.
Yeah, it was... I felt like the ending scene... was they had an awesome ending scene that was really cool, and Elton John was there. By the way, Elton John was the MVP of this movie.
Totally.
I'm just going to throw that out there.
He was hilarious.
But, like, they had the ending of the movie, and it was done, but then they just decided to make it last longer.
Yeah.
On top of it's I felt like that happened with a lot of the scenes. The opening car chase scene, I felt like that was, they had an awesome scene to the tune of Prince, and then they just tacked on a whole extra car chase scene.
Yep.
I felt like that was a running theme throughout the movie of it being slightly too long.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes. That's ridiculous for something like this. Considering, I think the first one, well, actually, no, the first one's 2 hours and 5.
Yeah, I think they should have cut out like 15 minutes of just filler, it would have been a much better movie.
But. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then what did you think about how much CGI is in this? Like, it just felt like, at least for us, it felt pretty much in every other scene, there was some kind of CGI interlude or part of it that they could have had more stakes in if it was real versus just like that. I mean, the gondola felt CGI. Him in the car at times felt CGI.
Yeah, well, I had less of an issue with it. And I think especially for the Kingsman franchise, it works really well for CGI because what they're going for is that comic booky feel where the camera like zooms in and out and it's all like, it's really cool. And I think the CGI works with that in a way that in other movies it doesn't. Could it have been a little bit too much at some points? Sure. But I didn't mind it.
Yeah, they bring back a character from the first one. They bring back Harry Hart, the original Galahad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I personally became okay with it later on, but I mm-hmm. still didn't really like it happening in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked it a lot more if they didn't show it in the trailer, but, yeah. You know, that's, we've already gone, or you guys have already gone into enough detail about how.
One thing we didn't really say, we weren't allowed to fully say it, is that the shot at the end where all the antidote gets transported to the cities is in the trailer.
The drones flying past the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's in the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. That was in the trailer, wasn't it?
So the entire movie, the moment you see that, like on Poppy's like screen, you see that there's this drone that she's like, my drones will take it. And they show this like box like drone. I'm like, that's so
how the movie's
gonna that's how the movie's gonna end. It's gonna they're gonna fly past the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah,
this wasn't even in the trailer for more than a second.
That's true. I try my very hardest not to watch any trailers ever, just because I always feel like it's probably gonna ruin a little part of the movie for me.
Yeah,
but I mean, I feel like that definitely happened with this movie, with you know, definitely the stuff with Harry, also with that, with the drone shots. So I guess on the other end, I saw the Thor trailer recently, and I could not watch it. It was just amazing, and I don't think that gave away too much. So it depends on the trailer, but oftentimes, especially with this movie, it gives away more than than I would want.
We'll talk this in the trailer talk later on.
Sure.
But I mean, this trailer is one of those ones. This happens sometimes where the trailer is not in sequential order like the stupid Spider-Man one was, but
yeah,
it's so still bad. So you had no idea until watching the movie that they spoiled the final shot in the movie, or like, mm-hmm. like they did that with they did it with Star Wars. They show that there's an X-wing battle, and that X-wing battle happens to be the ending of Force Awakens, and it just
that happens, and I mean that's why I don't watch trailers. It happens in so many trailers, so it's. To have to try not to watch it and then end up giving up after sitting through trailers at movie theaters, and it sounds really cool, so you have to look up.
But. Yep, I tried to stay away from trailers for Mother. I haven't even seen the movie though.
Yeah, but, I'm curious. I've heard not great things, but
well, yeah, the guy who took over who reviewed in the paper this past week, not me, but he slammed the film. But it's regardless, back to Kingsman. What'd you think of Mark Strong's final fate in this?
I liked it. I thought that was one of the... It didn't feel necessarily forced. I felt it was a good way to, you know, close off his character. Another one of my problems is how they killed off some of the characters in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
But I thought Mark Strong, like, it... His death felt not that he deserved to die, but I felt the full weight of what was going on, and I I appreciated that moment.
That was like really the only scene that worked emotionally for me, that like I had any actual emotional connection to the movie, even though I felt like it was fairly predictable. Like, you knew as soon as he was going out in the field that he was probably going to sacrifice his life to save them, but even then I still liked it.
I mean, I thought that some of the stuff between Harry and Eggsy was good. Like, there were moments where between the two of them that I thought were good, but I also thought that this movie could have been fine without Harry there. Like, they could have not brought him back, but the reception of his character in the first one is so high, they just had to, and the way they do it is so lame. The, like, weird gel patch they put over his head that pulls a bullet out of it. Like, that's so just MacGuffin-y cliche, like, oh, hey, we don't know what to do. Aha, we figured it out. It's this random piece of technology that saved his life.
Yeah,
I mean, I agree, probably. I'm not sure if he had to be in the movie. That being said, I thought the scene with the puppy when he was finally snapping back into it, that was another scene that got to me.
Yeah.
Like that worked when, like, he was realizing everything, and, like, Eggsy took it to, like, a dark place, but then it got back, and just that fluctuation of emotions, at least for me, worked.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that they had done stuff like that, though. One of my favorite ones they use him actually in the movie is in early on when Eggsy's going to Princess Tilde's house, and they flash back to him with Harry at, like, a dinner table, and he's teaching him how these, like, manners are, and I think that that would have been, like, instead of fully bringing the character back, flashing back and showing how this character, like, continually showing this character's importance in his life. And we really only get, like, one scene of that before they just bring him back.
Yeah.
We get that. Yeah. We get him, like, talking to Tilde and saying, like, I wish you had known him. Because, I mean, that was pretty powerful. Just to remind us how important this character was in his life. I mean, totally changed his life.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, when they kill off Roxy at the very beginning.
So just, like, nonchalantly. It was just like, oh, she's dead now.
I mean,
like,
it makes your jaw drop, if that's anything.
Yeah, well, even like, for that scene, when his house was blown up and his friend and his dog went, that I was surprised by. That's when my jaw dropped. And then they got to Roxy, and it's like, oh, no, they killed Roxy. It's like, well, okay, they killed Roxy.
Yeah.
Oh, she's probably coming back, isn't she? That's...
Yeah,
not, next movie. It's not a worthwhile death for such an important character in the first movie. It just felt kind of, you know.
Yeah, harsh. It felt really. I mean, we're at a point now with this movie, this franchise, where if you get shot in the head, you survive.
Yeah.
Which I think is that's usually the like go to where if that happens, you're usually dead.
Yeah.
That's like the only second is blowing a character up with a landmine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think Merlin's coming back.
No, I don't think so either. I think that would be so...
That would ruin it. If he comes back in the third one,
that would be like, so no characters have stakes anymore. Yeah, I did like Elton John, though.
Elton John was so good.
The way they use him, like, he keeps coming back, but I didn't really mind that. Like, his cameos, just, like, he became a full character in it. And he'd, like, pop in front... When he popped in front of the camera with the dog...
so good.
Actually, I know we only have 2 minutes left before we have to turn the spoilers off. I kind of wanted to hear what your guys' thoughts, and I guess kind of express my own, about Channing Tatum and Halle Berry's character, because they were not nearly in this movie as much as they should have been.
Yeah, they felt kind of... Channing Tatum, while he had screen time, it was all like asleep or drugged out.
Yeah,
I liked his intro when they met in the whiskey distillery. That was awesome. I really liked that. I was like, I was ready to go. I was ready for Channing Tatum to take a big role in this movie, and then like 20 minutes in, he's just in cryostasis, and that's it.
And Halle Berry doesn't have the amazing way that Merlin plays off in the first one, so you really don't care that her character is like, I was in the field, and then later on it's like, thank you for promoting me. Like, great.
Yeah,
I didn't have enough time with you to ever even care that this happened.
Yeah, well, here's my thoughts on it. I think that they kind of know what they're going to do for the third movie. And what they were doing is they're going to introduce these characters, so when they just throw in these two other heroes onto the team, it doesn't necessarily feel like it's forced in the beginning of the movie. They're already with them, so the third movie would be better. I think it did take a little bit away from this movie, but I think it's actually going to benefit for, you know, number three.
Yeah, this movie felt like it was setting up a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, and now Channing Tatum's a Kingsman? At the end of that, I got he was just buying a suit, not that he was becoming a Kingsman.
I mean, they're both the same now, so I don't think there's much of a difference.
Yeah.
Kingsmans or Statesmans, and
that's, you know. I don't know. All right, that's, I'm going to call our spoiler warning off now. Errol, would you like to stay on for a bit more?
Why not?
Sweet. All right. So I guess we'll be at three today, even though Matt's not here. So moving forward, it is 12:30, so we've got another half an hour to talk. Let's talk about what's, I had some cool news up going for this, but now I've totally lost it. Where was it? Okay, so we're getting more Terminator movies, if that wasn't already a thing. So, but now both James Cameron says that both Linda Hamilton and Arnold are coming back for the next few Terminator movies. I think he wants to do an entirely separate trilogy. We've seen action movies get revived this late in the past. Mm-hmm. We had Independence Day Resurgence last year, and that was a mess. I mean, I liked it, but I can agree with people that it is still a mess. And we're getting a Top Gun 2 at some point soon. Do we need a Terminator? What are we at now? Terminator 6, 7, 8, and 8?
Is James Cameron actually directing these?
He is producing them.
Oh, okay.
Along with the director of Deadpool will be directing.
Oh, okay. That is some promise, though.
Maybe,
these have worked before. Like, the Judge Dredd reboot, I really loved. I think that's an example of, like, doing it right.
Yeah, but that felt like
definitely an exception to me.
And this is a pure sequel. They're fully bringing back the cast. So I haven't even seen Genesis. I saw Salvation, and like, say what you want about Salvation, I enjoyed the fact that it's just different. But I can understand that these are going downhill. I like James Cameron. I like some of the stuff he's done in his past, but that guy is just, hasn't made a good decision in a while. I don't like Avatar.
It's my least favorite movie of all time. I hate that movie with a burning passion. Avatar's the worst.
Now we're getting Avatar 2, 3, 4, and 5.
When is Avatar 2? Avatar, it's been like 8 years.
Avatar 2 starts shooting next week.
Starts shooting?
Yeah.
What?
Well, they can't, because
I thought they were like done with it already.
Because of Star Wars, they can't shoot anymore. They can't release the movie because their cornerstone was always December, and now Star Wars has that. And like, dude, say what you want, never release a movie within the next 2 weeks or 2 weeks before or 2 weeks after Star Wars.
Well, it worked for Sing, because Sing was released around the same time as Rogue One, and that still made all the monies.
I think Sing was a counter. I don't even know. Would you consider Sing counter programming?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, it's definitely more of a family movie. Can I spoil Rogue One in my joke?
Yeah, you've seen Rogue One, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's been out long enough now.
Yeah, well, not everyone dies in Sing, so that's more uplifting.
Yeah.
You know, much better family film. That's what I went to see with my little cousins around Christmas time instead of Rogue One, so.
Yeah, Rogue One I don't like. I really don't like that movie. I think it's gotten worse. I've seen it, this is, I think, 4 times now. Every single time I've seen it, it's gotten worse. And this whole Han Solo thing is a mess. But 9 seems good. Not 9, sorry, 8. 8.
Yeah, no,
9 seems like a mess.
Yeah.
9 still seems like a mess.
I don't know. I am very optimistic about at least the main Star Wars movies. Because this happened so early in the production of 9. And they were able to bring in J.J. Abrams, who already lives in the Star Wars world.
I thought that was...
I think it'll be a smooth transition. And I think it will show significantly less than whatever's going on with Han Solo.
I mean, I still think that was such an easy decision to do, to choose to choose Abrams. It was like they'd make the safe decisions, but that was such a safe decision.
But is Trevorrow necessarily any better? It's taking an average filmmaker that they kind of expected just to be the person to tell them what to do and they go shoot it. Trevorrow started getting a voice, went to his head a little bit, and especially after his last movie, I forget what it was called, Book of Henry, I
think. Yeah.
Yeah, after that was just so bad, and Trevorrow started getting more of a diva mentality, I could see why they wanted to move on. And I think going with J.J. Abrams, even if it is the easy choice, I think easy might actually be the right choice. He was who I was rooting for. He's so far... I think he's a great director. And
yeah, but I think that I would have loved to see literally anyone else that was a safe pick. I just think he is the true safest pick, like, aside from having Kathleen Kennedy direct it.
I mean, I don't think there's enough time to pick, you know, a new voice. I think it's... For a movie that's this important, you know, to the Star Wars brand, they can't just give it to someone who has this crazy idea that wants to take the franchise in a new direction. They could probably do that going down the road with the future movies and whatever else Star Wars wants to do, but I think for Episode 9, because they have a timeline, they already have a release date, it would be a bad idea to take a risk on someone that might not work out, like Trevorrow did, or like Lord Miller did on Han Solo.
Well, Han Solo is still slated to be released next May. I don't understand how they're going to do that. It doesn't even seem like the movie's done in production yet. Mm-hmm. And if you look at December of 2018, that's pretty much filled now. I mean, they would be going up again. There's a weekend where Bumblebee and Aquaman come out at the same time.
Yeah.
We're getting a Transformers.
So there's a weekend where Aquaman comes out.
But I mean, the Bumblebee Transformers movie. Like, the Transformers spinoff versus Aquaman.
Yeah, I'm aware. So there's a weekend where Aquaman comes out.
Well, and then to have it followed up the next weekend by Mary Poppins Returns, which will probably take a lot of money for the for that market. And then Bohemian Rhapsody comes out that same weekend as well.
I don't know if Bohemian Rhapsody is going to be as big. It's going to take away some, but not much.
And
it's a very different market than Star Wars.
Well, I mean, the 9 December, I think WB will move this, but Wonder Woman 2 comes out the weekend before Star Wars 9.
Ooh.
Which...
That would be... Yeah, no.
That seems dumb.
I can see that being moved.
Like, even to January. I just think that's such a bad call.
Star Wars needs to come out before Christmas.
No, not Star Wars. Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman gets
moved. No, Star Wars will not move if they have that weekend in December date.
Yeah.
They'll never move it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they might move it. For Wonder Woman, even though it is a similar demographic as, you know, as Star Wars, if it's another really good movie like this Wonder... Like, you know, the first Wonder Woman was, if Patty Jenkins delivers again, Christmas, even going up against Star Wars, is tough to pass up.
I just think it's such a dangerous, like, we saw, I think it'll be interesting to see how 8 does, because 7 was such an incredible situation that it happened like that, where it made almost a billion in America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how well 8 does, because Rogue One did well. I think it made the $1 billion club, but it's not, it didn't do it in the same speed that Force Awakens did.
Also, it was a very different movie at a very different time. I don't think America wanted a movie where the world was blowing up right after certain events that happened in November.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that it had stuff rooting against it.
Yeah,
and it's also not a main series Star Wars movie. Like those main series Star Wars movies are gonna. If we'll see with 8 if that can do as well or close to what Force Awakens did. I don't think it will get there. I think
because I just don't think the hype right now, like the hype for Episode 7 is like the most I've ever felt for a movie.
It's the first time Star Wars been back in like decades.
Whereas 8, and it was I'm good. Not feeling that.
Yeah, and it wasn't the prequels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Disney knows how to market a movie better than anybody. Like they will, they will make sure everything is Star Wars going up. I mean, they have more than one date locked down. They have Force Friday in September to get all of their merchandising out, and they have Force Day in May for May the 4th be with you. So they literally will always have. They'll make sure Star Wars is in everyone's mind all the time, 24/7. All right. Well, there is a debate that I'm glad Errol's here too for this, because this is one that Alex and I talk about a lot. Is the trailer debate? We talked about this last year. Alex doesn't watch trailers. I watch trailers. I think that they've been both very good at times for me and very bad at times for me. But Errol, we'd like your take on, because you said earlier that you don't watch trailers.
I try my hardest not to watch trailers. I do, however, for movies that I am very excited about. I watch the teaser trailer, and most times it's usually just a little bit without giving away too much. But then I try to go cold turkey on the rest of the trailers. That's my method.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of where we came down to the last time. But I mean, even at times, I mean, the Kingsman 2 teaser trailer spoiled the reveal of a character in it, and we're off the spoiler level right now, so we can't really talk about it. But I mean, even sometimes they do that. I just think that there are times that the trailers are actually better than the movies. Life was a movie that came out earlier this year, and all the trailers for it, like teaser and full trailers, were incredible, and the movie didn't even get close to how good those were. And I think that we're hoping at least in come now. This seems like after Batman v Superman's like snafu with how big it was and people's huge backlash against that, that people would start like realizing this and maybe doing a better job. But I mean, even this year, I will like take a dump on Alien Covenant's trailer was spoily. Spider-Man's was atrocious.
Yeah.
Did you see the Spider-Man Homecoming trailers?
It was so bad.
Yeah, that was...
it was the type of thing where I was at the movie theaters, covering my ears so I couldn't listen, and looking at, looking off the screen, and I still was able to tell what the entire plot was.
Yeah.
You almost don't even need to see the movie after that
trailer. Well, yeah, I mean, you got lucky. You never saw the trailer until after. But I mean, and that's just as bad. And that's, I mean, I don't know who had the control over that, Sony or Marvel, but that's still, that's bad. That's
really bad.
It's not just DC. And, I mean, Wonder Woman did good. It didn't spoil its, third act, despite how I wasn't a fan of the third act. Errol and I actually saw Wonder Woman together at the Chinese theater.
That was cool.
But, I think there's different ways that people can market a movie that are so successful. The first teaser trailer for It Comes at Night tells you nothing at all about the movie. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic, and it gets you excited for it. And I get that major blockbusters need to, tell you, oh, this is something... But, I mean, even they specifically should be looking to not say anything about their plot whatsoever, because they already got people's money. People are going to go see Spider-Man no matter what.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they literally need to show... Maybe even like what I think Dunkirk did this for IMAX. They showed one scene, and that one scene was enough to get me to the theaters. They didn't need anything else in it, just that one singular scene. And it, I mean, even that, like the single scene itself won't spoil anything except for that small scene. And if the scene's
history spoiled the movie for us.
Well,
it's already well known what happens at the end of World War One. So
wait, wasn't it World War Two?
Might have been World War II. Honestly, I don't know. It's a world war, and there's Nazis and British people, and, you know.
They need to get out.
Exactly.
I mean, I like the way that they did show the film. They did preview it by just showing a scene from it. I think that's such an underrated way to show a movie, is just showing one scene. And maybe after that, a few clips from it. That's such enough to rope somebody in, especially with those big blockbuster movies. If we'd seen like Spider-Man messing around in one scene that was in Act One, it would have gotten everybody hooked, probably more than the trailers did, and it wouldn't have spoiled anything.
Yeah, just kind of let you know what the movie's about, the tone.
I mean, I see your point, and you probably could do it. It's very dangerous to do it that way if you're trying to pick one scene to, you know, cut together into a trailer. Because oftentimes, you know, some people will not know what they're doing and end up cutting together a very critical scene that gives away 2/3 of the plot. That's going to happen. And
Alien
I think,
Covenant.
I mean, so I don't know. It's really any way that you can make a trailer, there's going to be ways to do it in bad ways. So that's,
sure. The It trailer is very good, but the It trailer does spoil a movie.
I haven't seen the It trailer, I don't think. Oh, yeah. I have.
Have you seen the first one? The teaser's good.
Yeah, that's just the opening scene, right, with the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
because that's not even spoiling anything, because you would assume people have already
seen
the first
movie.
That's such
a good... That's why it's such a strong trailer.
Yeah, that was done.
And the second trailer is also really good, and it's one of the greatest trailers seen there, but it does spoil parts of the
basement scene, right?
Yep, yeah. And it shows you the link to act... it shows you the link to Act 3.
Uh-huh.
Which I didn't need to see because I knew now it was coming the whole movie. And the stuff like that, they didn't need that. They could have just opened with that first trailer and been fine. I would like to see more, at least with trailers, I would like to see more variation of what they're doing. I mean, even if it's not every movie that does this like idea of just throwing a scene out there and seeing how it sticks, mm-hmm. just trying new methods of showing a move of like getting people interested in a movie that isn't just a trailer, because we're getting to a point where it seems like studios just don't know how to make trailers anymore without ruining parts of the movie.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think one movie that did an okay job was Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, Volume 2 and even Volume 1. But what I think they do is they just show a whole bunch of action shots over, you know, one of the songs. And even if it is gives away part of stuff that happens, it's just all action. You can't really tell what goes where, and it doesn't mean anything. So you're not going into the movie expecting all these different things to happen. It's just, oh, look, an explosion and punching, but it's tuned to this cool song. So I'm, you know, I don't know. I think that's a better way to do it, but not perfect.
What they underestimated with Guardians 1 was how powerful word of mouth would be. And I think that even nowadays, that's so much more important than, say, a trailer is. Trailers just gotta get the initial group of people into the theaters. And then, like, with Guardians 1, the Guardians 1 trailers were atrocious. They were, like, the first few ones were just them walking down a hallway to Hooked on a Feeling.
I kind of like those trailers.
But, like, in terms of a completely new property, I feel like they need a little bit more. Like, a better example, Frozen. Frozen's original trailers are terrible. They're just Olaf talking on a screen. And for something that is not a well-known property, you can't do that. And it's crazy to think that, like, how that movie had such a small opening and then exploded. And that was entirely word of mouth. I remember after I saw it the first time, I told all of my friends to go see this movie. And it just slowly got bigger and bigger and bigger until it became a phenomenon and was in theaters for an entire year.
That's true. I mean, I didn't see Frozen in theaters because that was, I think, before I became obsessed with movies. Or, like, right as I was turning into the obsession. But it was pretty much... it happened. My little sister watched it. She was obsessed. And I eventually found it, like, watched it on my phone. And I was waiting for, like, a doctor's appointment or something. I was like, wow, this is actually really good. I like this movie a lot. Why? I now see why everyone went to see it.
Well, and then that was success from word of mouth. And I think that, I mean, everyone's complaining, like, this summer there was so much complaints, like, oh, why did Baywatch fail? Because Baywatch wasn't that good of a movie.
Yeah.
And, like...
I thought it was funny.
But when you put it up against other R-rated comedies of, even of this summer... what was the one? I mean, I never saw Girls Trip. I know you guys did and said it was really good. Michael did, at least.
Yeah, oh, that was good.
But what was the other one? The
Big Stick?
No, Big Stick is... it's a comedy. It was R-rated.
Okay.
But I wouldn't like... It wasn't a raunchy comedy.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's more of a movie than a comedy.
Yeah.
That's just... It's a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Such a good movie.
A little
movie.
Bit of drama, a little bit of comedy, a little bit of...
Yeah, I should see that sometime.
But who's the one with... not Girls Trip. I keep running back to Girls Trip.
Oh, is it Rough Night?
Rough Night, yes.
Yeah.
That was serviceable. It was an entertaining... Like, I liked it as much as I liked Central Intelligence the year before. Like, it wasn't...
You go ahead.
It was like, and then, I mean, you watch the Jump Street movies and you go, why can't every comedy be like this? But there's so much complaint about how that movie tanked, and it's like, it's because of bad word of mouth. Because people initially saw it, it did okay in opening weekend, and then people were like, why don't see the movie? Same thing with Pirates. Pirates did okay. It didn't do as well as they wanted it to, because when people see it, they're like, yeah, great. It's just the way that movies are successful these days are so mismarketed.
And, like, everybody wants to blame, like, Rotten Tomato now for that and online stuff. But I think, I don't see why, right? That's just another, that's more accountability for actually making good movies.
Yes.
I mean, I saw an article relatively recently that there was a study done that proves that Rotten Tomatoes doesn't actually affect box offices. And normally when, like, fans' perceptions are close to critical perceptions, regardless of what the number actually is, the movie makes more number makes more money.
It's less of, that's always been the argument with people outside of the filmmaking industry, is that it's like, you don't need to, like, be upset at Rotten Tomatoes for panning your movie. Just make a better movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's seriously all you need. And, I mean, there is, like, issues of when and where to release your movie at. Like, what month is the best one, too? Because nowadays, I mean, even summer is nowhere a guarantee of a movie doing well anymore.
That being said, I think August this past summer was the biggest missed opportunity. I think the reason why August was so bad wasn't because, you know, the movies didn't make money, people didn't go to the theaters. It's because there just wasn't any really good movies for people to go see. Mm-hmm. I think if Valerian, which tanked, would have went up against Dunkirk and Spider-Man and Planet of the Apes on its opening weekend, if it was released, you know, let's say August 11th, it would have had no competition, and it would have had plenty of legs, because not another movie of that size, you know, opened until it. So yeah, it would have made significantly more money if it, you know, was released, you know, 2-3 weeks later.
When August was really missing a jump starter, what's like makes the, like, at least what it seems like with a lot of the months this year, is what made the box office run well was some kind of a jump starter that would be like, hey, movies are good right now, go to the theater. For and, like, Detroit didn't open big enough for that. And yeah, instead of Detroit that weekend, there was The Dark Tower, which bombed. And then, like, people, and you just saw this kind of okay box office for lackluster movies like Annabelle Creation, which wasn't good, but did so well because it wasn't facing anything. This first real competition came 4 weeks after its release with It.
But it's too bad then that movies like Logan Lucky.
Oh, that's such a sad story.
Did Good Time end up doing well? I feel like it didn't.
I had the numbers on it yesterday.
Are two movies that I thought of. The only two movies in August that really... I haven't seen either of them yet, but that, like...
Logan Lucky's so good.
To-do list.
Logan Lucky is one of the best movies of the summer. And I think that's... It's swept under the rug so much because of that. Good Time made... It's going to break $2 million soon. But it made its full budget back, just barely. But I don't think it was looking to do any more than that. I think it's going to do well on home video. All right, thanks so much, Errol, for calling in. We're gonna wrap up the show here, so we'd love for you to come out to the studio at some point in the future. And
that'd be awesome.
Sweet, thank you so much, man.
Actually, do I have time to do a couple quick plugs for my podcast?
Totally.
Go for it.
Nice. Okay, so I wanted to give a quick shout out to my podcast, On Set with Errol Koenig. If you're a fan of the entertainment industry and movies, I talk to a whole bunch of people that work in it, and they talk about how they got to where they are and what they do. So that's really cool. You can check that out. And also Cop Monologuing, where I talked to one of my friends at school at Johns Hopkins with me. And we just talk about similar stuff as on this radio show, a whole bunch of nerdy pop culture movie stuff. We go through news, review movies. That's called Cop Monologuing. Both of those shows are available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play. So give us a listen.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks so much, Errol.
Thanks, guys.
See ya. All right, and like you said, yes, please support Errol's multiple shows, Cop Monologuing and On Set. They're both fantastic. I've listened to both of them. And now it's sadly that time of the show where we have to wrap up. So we got to do. Matt's not here for box office, so I'll pull it up quickly. I'm actually very interested to see how this is.
I know what Kingsman did.
I had a guess what Kingsman did.
What's your guess?
I already looked at it. My guess was 50 million. Ends up hitting. Wow. I'm actually, there's a stat on here that's really interesting. So Kingsman, The Golden Circle comes in at 39 million.
Yep.
Following it up in number two in its third weekend is It, making $30 million. It was 9 million away from being the number one hit in a week with a very, very big release.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if It's back on top next week.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be, especially going into October.
Yep.
In third is the Lego Ninjago movie at 21.2. I'm surprised It beat this.
Yeah.
That we had two R-rated movies sitting at the top.
Yeah, that is really interesting.
American Assassin clocks in at 4 with 6.2. That, I mean, makes sense. In fifth, Home Again with 3.3. In sixth, dropping out of the top five in its second weekend is Mother with 3.2. That's sad.
I'm so disappointed that, like, finally a big studio takes a big risk on a kind of artsy movie, and they just happen to pick kind of bad artsy movie. And it's too bad.
Yeah, I think that they could have.
They should have, like, if they were gonna pick some kind of more artsy movie for a wide release.
Well, they shouldn't have wide released it. They should have released it small and made it bigger.
Yeah,
that's how you like do stuff like that. Ah, gosh, and that would have at least given it some Oscar buzz.
Yeah.
In seventh, not a big surprise. Friend Request makes $2.4 million. That is a mess. That movie just did, like, it averaged $933 a screen. That's so bad.
Yep.
Like that's such a low, that's such a low gross for something like that. This has been released in other countries. New here. It actually made, it made 2.1 in the UK and 2.4 in Germany. So it has a good chance of making its money back, which I think is interesting because it just seems like such a movie that shouldn't.
Yeah.
they need to stop making movies like this, like just bad horror movies. And that's usually a January release movie.
Yeah, up there with January, February.
Every January we get some bad horror movie. Yep. This past year it was The Bye Bye Man. A year before that it was The Forest. Year before that, I believe it was Texas Chainsaw. No, maybe not. I don't know. But there's always been a bad horror movie in January. It's kind of like a tradition now. In number eight is The Hitman's Bodyguard at 1.8. That makes sense. That movie has been doing very well for only being released here and making $73 million, almost going past doubling its budget, which I think is amazing. Following it up in number nine... we have Stronger, which was this smaller release movie. It made 1.7 in only 500 theaters, which is great. It's made 3,000 a theater, which that's pretty good for a smaller one. The highest gross at a theater was highest gross per screen was Battle of the Sexes, which made $25,000 per screen, made $525,000 on only 21 screens.
Yeah.
Which is good. I've heard some Oscar buzz about this. Let's scroll down and see what's still in theaters, weirdly.
Spider-Man Homecoming, still in theaters.
Still in theaters?
A million plus, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
1.1 million.
That's very impressive. Let's see. Cars 3, in its 15th week, made 92,000. 47 Meters Down is still in theaters, making 37,000, which... doesn't make any sense. I think that movie comes out on Blu-ray next week. The Big Sick is still in theaters. It's still doing pretty well. Made 114,000. Despicable Me 3 and Baby Driver, both still in theaters. You're right. Spider-Man Homecoming made over $1 million, yep. And it's still in theaters. In its 12th week, it made over $1 million.
That's crazy.
It's, not only is it still in theaters, it's still in 1,000 theaters.
Yeah.
Like, it's still playing everywhere. Wind River, still doing well. It's in its eighth week. It made 1.2. That's such a great success story.
Of just like a slow grind.
Yeah.
All that. Like, not a big opener, but just...
All right.
Go away.
Well, I guess we don't really have much time to say. Next week we get... Flatliners and American Made. I'll probably go see Flatliners. I know Matt wanted to see American Made, and you can tag along on whichever one you want or neither.
Yeah, I'm not super excited about either of those, to be honest.
We'll see. And so those are next weekend. American Made looks good. So I'm interested to see that. So far, though, thank you guys so much for watching. You've been listening to WJRH 104.9 FM, Lafayette College Radio, Easton, Pennsylvania. This has been Animatronic Dinosaurs with yours truly, Allie Rosen and
Alex Holm.
Thank you guys so much.